Hello. Okay, before we get started, I have a quick announcement. The Angels are looking for additional volunteers as heralds, people to introduce the speakers at the beginning of talks. If you're interested, at 1945, there's going to be a meeting, an introductory meeting for heralds in the Angel Room downstairs in the basement. That's 1945, 7:45 p.m. And that is it. So if everyone can silence your cell phones, we'll get started with the talk. So here's Rupp.
Hello there. Can everybody hear me? Okay, good. I'm going to be basically be doing a little update on the story that we had last year. So let's just see where we were. I told you all about the origins of our campaign. At that point, we had just had the March 2006 municipal elections. And after that, a lot of stuff happened. Holland at that point, during that those March elections, was 99% e-voting. And Amsterdam had just switched to e-voting from paper ballots. And this was what the market looked like. 90% of the Dutch population voted on this machine you see on the left. The NeedUp, usually the ES3B machine, and 10% voted on this SDU NuVote machine that you see over there. So when I went to vote, I got to use the NuVote because I live in Amsterdam. And the NuVote is a Windows-based touchscreen machine that had to meet no requirements whatsoever regarding computer security, as long as it could stand vibration and moisture and deal with a glass of water that fell over it and something. Also, the SDU NuVote had a wireless GPRS modem built in, which we weren't too happy about. We started researching that. I got very angry, and a number of my friends got very angry at the polling station. We started researching, and we found out that not only did these machines not have to meet any realistic specifications, but also these companies that were running these machines had completely taken over the election, especially SDU, the former state printing press, which had been privatized. Their business model was basically, we'll bring in the computers, we'll bring in the entire election, we'll train the poll workers, and in the evening, we'll just tell you who won. So you don't have to stress your municipal organization running these pesky elections, we'll do it completely for you. So we set up a campaign, basically around two issues. Voting is not very transparent. You can't really see if the result is really what it's meant to be. And because they were claiming it's very secure, we said, and it's not very secure either. Our campaign was very media-based. We had a lot of newspaper articles, a lot of press coverage, and we also did a lot of freedom of information requests. So we used the law, in this case, the freedom of information law, very extensively. Things didn't really get out of hand until we got hold of NADOP computers, the voting system that 90% of the country used, and we showed that you could change the software and that there were radio emission problems. All of this was in my talk last year, so I'll just go over it really quickly. Then they decided to test the radio problems also against this other brand, the SDU NuVote, and they found out that you could receive clearly at 40 or 50 meters distance the contents of the display, in other words, what you were voting for. With amateur equipment, just a TV receiver, you could receive what was going on. As a result of all of this, they suspended that license, and they also, the OSCE, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, sent an election observation mission to the Netherlands, and the government appointed two commissions. I'll come back to that later. Then there were the national parliamentary elections, at which point we, instead of doing anything anarchist, we distributed apple pies to all the 500-something Amsterdam polling stations because we were so happy that they were counting paper again because they had outlawed this SDU NuVote machine. Basically, before these people could get into a bad mood for having to spend an extra hour or two, we came by with an apple pie and a letter explaining why we had done it, and why it was important. Which is where we discovered that there's a major media hole, and that if you have something that is related to the elections but is not party-related in the morning of the elections, you'll get any amount of media coverage you want because they're basically just standing around in the polling stations going, well, there's just been a voter, and I think it started to rain. which you know from election morning coverage, it's really boring. The year started, after I talked about this at the Congress, the year started already in January with SDU announcing that they would reapprove or that they would seek reapproval of the SDU new vote, and the government had apparently agreed to retest, better shielding, and they wanted to change the colors because some colors, the contrast between some colors really works well on receivers. And some other color differences are not so easy to see. So they made a display which was red on green. Now, if anybody is familiar with people that are colorblind, but they figured that this was really hard to receive at a distance. It was still the same unpatched Windows installation. There was still the wireless GPRS modem, but that all didn't matter because, of course, there were no requirements for that. But secrecy of the vote was an absolute requirement, so they had to meet that. And they didn't because apparently on the first test, some screw was loose inside the box, which caused it to radiate like hell. And there was all sorts of other interesting problems. I'll just quickly sort of go over the events of this year. So it'll be a little bit of a sort of, and then this happened, and then this happened story. The Kiesraad, which is the electoral council in Holland, it's a little bit, you can compare it, I think, to the Bundeswahlleiter in Germany. We found out that Groenendaal, this company that we talked about last year, I'll come to them later too, was actually calculating the final results, in other words, tabulating the entire election at the Kiesraad offices, but it was actually Groenendaal people doing it. So this whole, in the beginning, we were sort of screaming that the whole elections had been privatized, and we thought we were exaggerating, and then we turned out we weren't so much exaggerating after all. Then there was also this Guus de M, a guy in Landert, a municipality in the south of the Netherlands. He was the candidate that got over 180 votes. And out of 1,000 in the precinct that he was operating the NEDAP in. So he was a candidate and he was operating the machine and he got very many votes. They did a shadow poll later. A newspaper tracked down half of the people that were voting in his precinct and they could find 2 votes for him among these people instead of 90, which would be expected out of those 180. And he was prosecuted and acquitted because there was not enough evidence. So this basically proves that you can do anything with these NADAPs and you will not be convicted. What basically happened, or what people think happened, is people walked away without voting because they have to press not only the candidate button but also the confirm button. And people were not confirming. And everybody that's been sitting behind NADAP machines in elections knows that you have to call people back. Like, sir, madam, you haven't voted yet. Could you please press the confirm button as well? He was sending people away that hadn't voted, and this way he was saving up votes, and then every once in a while he would stand in front of his machine to better position it towards the light or something, and then he would quickly vote that number of votes for himself, or at least so is his accusation. Of course, he's acquitted. There's an appeal, which we'll see on January 4th, so really soon. Then, why is it not advancing? There. Then there's the report by OSCE, the people from the Office for Democratic Institutions and Human Rights. They are the election observation people in all of Europe and Africa and Asia. They go all over the world. And they had a report that said, in order to enhance public confidence in DRE voting systems and to provide for meaningful audits and recounts, legislation regulating use of such systems should include provisions for a paper trail or an equivalent verification procedure where it doesn't define what that is. And it says software-dependent vote recording mechanisms which do not permit an independent check on their operation should be phased out, which is very important, I think. It's the first time that they've ever had statements that were this direct. And they also said, as you can see in the last paragraph, there should be no secrecy in the voting process. Everybody should be able to understand how it works. Very important because the OSCE had, on previous elections that they've observed, had been much more careful about electronic voting. It's like, yes, it's just a new kind of voting and you just have to observe it in a different way. You have to look at the certification procedure. And here they clearly said, well, really it isn't good enough. You maybe remember from last year, this is a recycled slide, this is Jan Groenendaal, the man that programmed the election tabulation software in Holland and also for Germany. It's a three-person company. And they have the exclusive rights to sell the NADAP voting computers in the Netherlands, or they had. And they're also involved in selling them in Germany. And he said, open source is really bad because then everybody knows how it works and that's not secure. And the fact that only a very limited group of people has knowledge can also be seen in a positive light, which I can't think of a more direct insult to my religion. Anyway, this is Jan Groenendaal. And in our campaign, we got an interesting bit of freedom of information material where Jan Groenendaal mails the ministry, and both through email and postal mail. He threatened that if I were to be on this commission, because they hadn't announced who was on it, if I were to be on this commission, he would cease to cooperate on any and all elections. And trying to get me arrested. He was basically pushing the ministry to preventatively arrest me for terrorism or charges like terrorism because I was disrupting society. He also said that the state must buy his company today, or basically immediately, because otherwise he would no longer help out with the 2007 provincial elections. So he knew that the value of his company was rapidly decreasing. And this is all when the Kiesraad, our electoral council, had already said elections without his help were hardly thinkable, hardly imaginable anymore, because his software was so central in the election process. We also got another interesting bit of correspondence between him and the ministry, between him and the municipalities in his newsletter, which he writes to all his customers, which are the local municipalities. Here he wrote, we have a Freedom of Information Act, it's a good thing, but if you want to be angry at government, just realize that it's all going to come out. Before the ink is dry, it's on the internet for everyone to see, and the media will claim you're blackmailing the government, even though his mail clearly said, if you don't do this, I will not help you out with these elections. He is now beginning to feel how the DDR citizens must have felt, which is really poor man. Hello. Then we also had this interesting bit where Wikipedia first said the above sentence, where they're turning it down, or their decision against e-voting was actually said by their foreign minister, Amato. So we had the quote that their foreign minister had actually said, well, we'll just not do it because it's easier to falsify, or you won't know whether the results are real. And NADAP, from their IP number, changed it to Cremona Municipality was very satisfied, which is, of course, saying something different. Then the first commission reported. Now, the first commission was the commission that was appointed basically to figure out how we got into this mess. Because by then, our government realized that things had gone awfully wrong, and that we had machines that nobody could really vouch for, that weren't transparent. The software was made by a company that wouldn't show it to anybody. All sorts of things had gone wrong in the process. And this commission was basically going back 20 or 25 years, or even into the 60s, the first mechanical voting machines in the Netherlands, basically to figure out where the country had gone wrong. And it was a very harsh report which came out. The ministry had been sleeping for 20 years, even though people had been saying, look, this is not right, and you should be looking at these things, and it's not transparent. And they had basically sent very reassuring letters and emails to everybody that came up with that. We had letters from dating 15 years back where they were reassuring people. Really, there's an official bureaucracy that's looking at these machines, and it's really good because we've tested them. And we found all this through the Freedom of Information requests. Anyway, the Secretary of State, the political person dealing with this, said, this is all wrong, we'll do things differently from now on. Through the commission report, we also got the letters that this commission received. And one interesting letter that they had received was from NADUP, the company that makes the voting machines. Why is this thing not help? And NADUP says, look, the OSCE report says open source versus secret proprietary systems, but they do so very carelessly. They don't explain what open source is. And people might think that this is not open source, but our systems are programmed in C, which is a publicly available programming language, and therefore it's open source. And the document, you think that's funny, huh? Well, this company still makes the software and the hardware that counts your votes, not mine. Then we got a little bit of insight into government strategy. There was these two commissions, and the one that was supposed to report on the past being this thing that's far away and closed off and we're going to do everything differently. And there was a community that reports on the future, which is also far away when everything's going to be different. And of course, this left this convenient period, the now, which they could stretch as long as they wanted, because of course we wanted to do it right for the future, where they would not have any of these commission reports to bother them, and they really wanted to keep the NADUPs around, at least until they got something new, or at least until they could build new stuff or get industry to build new stuff. Also, we learned a lot about how commissions work, because these commissions were supported by civil servants from the ministry. And of course, these civil servants were the people that were interested in keeping these NADUPs around. So the facts that this commission got to deal with and then sort of the reality that was presented to them was very colored towards, let's keep these NADUPs around. Is there maybe a glass of water somewhere? Is that water? Or somebody maybe has one? Ah, never mind. It's not full. And clearly, they also figured that these activists would go away, that this whole activist problem was a temporary thing. We now had our 5 minutes of fame. Thanks. And these commissions were appointed. And actually, as we had our first conversation at the ministry at the end of 2006, they already said stuff like, well, you now have your attention. We're going to fix it now. You just go away and do something else, and we'll fix it for you. Then in July also, the NADUP factory caught fire, or at least the place where they were testing and rebuilding voting machines. And as I heard that, I was in Amsterdam. I have an alibi. yeah, don't laugh, because I was scared shitless. Because I figured we were saying very serious things about how democracy was really suffering from these voting machine vendors and how they had gotten hold of our elections. And I thought, oh my God, it's only going to take one crazy person to really do damage to our campaign. If it turns out that somebody that has been reading our website has set fire to their factory, we're screwed. As it turned out, luckily, the fire was not set at all. It was started in their testing room from a short circuit. So it was apparently all researched, and there was no arson involved. Throughout the year, we also discovered something else interesting. And that is that we started reading and rereading and rereading the regulations, and we found something interesting. Namely, that the definition of a voting machine allows for the inclusion of auxiliary equipment, meaning the stuff they need to get the machine ready for the election, the software they need to put the candidates in or to tabulate the results. They could all include that in the definition of a voting machine. However, the voting machine must also have a user-friendly facility that allows for the list of candidates to be entered. Now, that facility was in the software that they were trying not to have tested, because this Groenendaal software that is run at the municipality that they program the candidates with, tabulate the results with, that is explicitly not part of the voting machine in terms of the testing bureaucracy. So they tried to exclude that, and we basically pointed to this being mutually exclusive. Either they wanted it in, In which case the voting machine would meet the requirements, but then it would need to be tested, or they wanted it out, but then the voting machine no longer met the requirements. Based on that and a number of other things, we appealed the approval, because for the provincial elections they did a new approval, which we appealed because it didn't meet the requirements, but also because the documents weren't even in the hands of government. Brightsight, the company that does the testing, that is accredited in Holland by law to do the testing of voting machines, that company had written an extensive report and a one-page certificate that said, yes, it meets the requirement, and only the certificate had to be given to government. However, they based their decision on the two documents, both on the certificate and on the report. And the report wasn't with government. It was only, they were allowed to see it, and then it was taken away from them, like, yes, now you've seen it, now go away. And of course, when you get to a judge, if you appeal a decision, the documents underlying that decision have to be in front of the judge. And NEDAP was refusing. Then came the second report. We had been to court at that point, pleading our case, like there's a document missing and they don't meet the requirements. And then the second report, this was the how do we get out of this mess commission. They basically advised on a system with two computers, one to print votes and the other to count. And there's a little movie they did, which is much, much longer, where they show how the system works. You select and then it prints. And then in the evening, you throw that into a... So there's only one count based on the pieces of paper inserted into the... Yeah? And then a machine counts the votes. Now, why anybody would want to do this, but this is how they want to do it, because humans can't count votes, they think. So they still want the result to come from some computer, but they split it up so that there's something to recount, and they want to make the software for both devices open. Of course, it's a much better solution than what we have, which is just trust us, and it's a count coming from a computer, and you just have to trust it. As a result of this commission report, or at least that's the official story, and probably because as a result of the fact that we went to court and that they were expecting the decision to be negative, government actually gave up on the NEDAPs. They were going to make new regulations. Hello. They were going to make new regulations to sort of reapprove the NEDAPs, but make the regulations a little bit more up to date. And the Secretary of State, upon accepting the report, basically announced, we're going to retract all legislation and basically scrap the current generation of voting machines, going back to paper ballots until this new system that was proposed was in existence. Yeah, that made us very happy, and we were even happier when the week after they also lost in court, basically nullifying the approval decision. So NEDAPs were at that point no longer approved for use in election. And in Holland, the system is such that any election result that is accepted by Parliament itself is a valid result. So there's no complaints later, and there's also no question about the validity of an election. After that point, the state also had to pay the court costs, which was pretty much nothing. And another interesting thing that happened in that case is that the ESD1, which is the machine that Holland is using, but that's also approved in Germany, the D is actually for Deutschland, the ESD1, which is reapproved back into Holland because they had stock left over probably, had no prototype approval. And then they said, well, that's not necessary, because it's really just another ES3B with a few minor changes. Which is interesting, because they're saying something completely different here in Germany to sort of isolate the ESD1 from all the troubles that have been happening in Holland. NEDAP has been reacting funnily, and on October 1st, they were clearly not believing it yet. Well, the municipalities decide, and if you really wanted to get rid of the NEDAPs, you'd have to change the law, which Parliament would have to agree on. Never realizing that Parliament doesn't need to vote on regulations which the ministry can change by themselves. And voting on paper is bad anyway, it will never work. Then on October 12th, they were realizing that their computers were going to go away for a while. And they said, well, the market was saturated anyway. And now the market is all open again because, of course, we get to build this new system. We should be thanking the Secretary of State and the Courthouse Commission because the decision was based on that report. And then on November 28th, they did a press release in which they said election systems will generate a lower turnover, especially in the Netherlands. Less machines were sold because the market is saturated. We made some extra profit because we had to put seals on them, because the Dutch machines were not sealed at all. Anybody could just open them and change the software. And so they had to seal all the machines in 2006, from which they made extra money, because they charged copiously for that. And as you can see, you are in Germany here is one of the countries which is increasingly positive towards voting machines. So things are looking better and better. The market is open again, and we're going to be doing great. They also sent an interesting letter to Parliament, basically saying everybody's dumb and we're smart, everybody gets it wrong, our voting machine computers aren't even computers. And of course, if you look at the type plate on the machine, you can see that they themselves call it a STEM computer. It's perfectly secure, and they also said it's very transparent. Now, well, how they define very transparent, we're still not sure. Also, there is a new solution, and this new solution is already done. There's no need to think about anything. We've already hooked up a printer to our machine, and then it can be that voting printer, and we can also do the counting machines. So there's no need to throw away your existing investment on NADAPS, and we can just keep selling these machines. NADAP has also brought a number of new cases. Of course, they've appealed the decision in the case that we brought. That is now at the highest instance. We don't think they stand much of a chance, but they're trying anyway. And it's very interesting in that highest instance because the state is now turning against them. We were basically appealing a state decision in which they were heard as a third party. So we were against them and the state. And now in the appeal, they've appealed, and both the state and us are asking the court to throw the case out. So that's a very interesting development. And they've also made a new case against the government. This new decision to basically retract the legislation, they're fighting that as well, which probably stands even less of a chance. And then there's Groenendaal, the company that makes the tabulation software. And they are threatening to sue the country because the cities were told, no, you can't use their software anymore. And there's nothing in the law about that software whatsoever. It can be closed source. It can be bought from anybody. You can use whatever you want. There's no regulations whatsoever. So they may actually have a point there. They may actually get some damages paid to them. We never know. Then on December 20th, we had a public hearing, which wasn't so public because it was just NADAP and us and the ministry. But we had a public hearing about the case they brought against the government. And in that hearing, they all of a sudden said, well, the damages resulting from these retractions run in the millions of euros, which of course contradicts everything they've been saying so far. So we've asked them if that wasn't stock-sensitive information or whether we were allowed to publish that, which made them all upset. This is NADAP's talk. As you can see during this year, because what you're seeing here, the bigger picture is actually the whole previous year. As you can see, their stock went up tremendously. Now, before interpreting this, you have to understand NADAP is a 600-person company. They do much, much more than electronic voting. They build cattle recognition and feed systems, door access systems, parking gates, all sorts of low-volume electronics that they build themselves or have built. But the voting thing is the only thing they're known for. So it's a large part of their public image, even though it's not a big portion of their turnover. As you can see, the red arrow, by the way, is when their competition was finally scrapped. As I said, they tried to reapprove SDU, and then when that didn't work, that was the first spike. Then the yellow is when the first report came out, because that was generally thought to be positive for NADAP. Of course, there's lots of things here that we can't explain, but the green arrow is the day before the Secretary of State announced that they would be voting on paper. And as you can see, it's been fairly steeply downhill from there. Okay, current status. The appeal is pending. NADAP's case against the state is on hold because they're waiting for the decision of the state in this that follows out of that hearing that just happened, the 20th. But neither will influence the future. The worst thing that could happen, quote unquote, is for NADAP to get money from the state as sort of damages because the state hasn't been hasn't done the proper procedures in getting rid of them. But there won't be any electronic voting based without a paper trail. They've also just announced the group of experts, and the group of experts will now study the feasibility of the new system, especially the Tempest problem, the radio radiation thing. It's the first time in the civil arena that people are worried about Tempest, are worried about compromising emanations. Now, we've known about this issue maybe since the 80s, maybe since the early 90s, but the general population certainly hasn't. There's no other class of electronics that have to meet these criteria except military communications gear. So apparently the military community is very, very unhappy because now all of a sudden there's a call for civil standards because all the current standards are classified. So you can't build a voting system unless you have to have it meet classified specifications, which is really weird and wrong. But the military is apparently very upset. The people in NATO doing the Tempest stuff are apparently very upset that this is now so all of a sudden an issue in voting. But this commission is also, or this group of experts, it's not really a commission, is also going to advise on new regulations and requirements. So government is now presently saying, yes, we want to move forward and we want to build these new voting systems because they foresee major anger from the municipalities. Because, of course, the municipalities, just like in America, just like in Germany, in all countries where e-voting is now an issue, the pressure from the other side is municipal employees that are very worried about having people count pieces of paper and about the whole process becoming messy. They'd rather have something clean, even though they feel it's, they know it's not transparent, but they don't care. As long as government says it's okay, they'd rather have something clean than something messy, even though the messy thing is maybe much more transparent. The cabinet reaction to the report from the commission said something very important. I mean, this is the sentence that we've been saying all along, but this is now the actual Dutch government viewpoint. Everything about the election must be understandable for everybody. If there are any questions, we must be able to answer them. No more secret parts, no more hidden software, closed source, proprietary systems. This is now, I mean, we still have to see how it all plays out. We still have to see what develops in Holland. Because the plan by the commission had some very edgy components. They said, well, if optical character recognition is too difficult, maybe a barcode is also good, which of course it isn't. They said, well, maybe we can do a system where if you vote out of your own city, say in municipal elections, maybe we can use the internet to bring those votes to the polling station where they're supposed to be, which is also very wrong, especially if you know that there's only one person that has been there from Rotterdam or from some other city, then you know what they voted. Let me go over a few slides that were here last year. This was the pre-2006 media attention that this issue had gotten. And then red is the, blue is general media about electronic voting. And in red, it's media that specifically deals with this issue. And as you can see, the big red thing there is Ireland in 2004. And Ireland decided not to use the NADAP machines that they had just bought. They'd basically bought 10,000 of these machines and then decided to never use them after studying them and finding them insecure. Six mentions per year since 98, which is when people first started thinking about these issues. And then in 2006 in Holland, we had 520 mentions of the issues over the year. Of course, the most were in October when this SDU NuVote computer was decertified and when we announced our, look, you can change the software. And then this is a new slide. This is this year. As you can see, the issue still hasn't died. 674 mentions. September is after the report. And in July, those general e-voting references are the fire at NADUP. So they were just about the fire, just mentioning e-voting without talking about the issues. I'll go into some future events this year. Of course, we have the appeal in Landert that I already talked about, which is the last chance for the government to get the guy that they feel voted 180 times for himself to get him convicted. I heard the district attorney in that case speak, and it was very important. It was very interesting because the prosecutor said it was in a at a seminar, and he basically said, "Well, after we started researching this, the case for abolishment became very clear, pretty much immediately." So they were already very convinced that this was not good, very early on. Then, end of this next month, there's the discussion in Parliament about this new system and about whether we want it. At which point, the Dutch Parliament is going to say, "Yes, please, Secretary of State, go ahead and build these new systems." Probably, because they haven't had time to figure out that it's really hard, or they haven't had time to screw up. The one thing you don't have to help the Dutch government with is screwing up large IT projects. They can do that all by themselves. Then, of course, also this year, there's the Bundesverfassungsgericht. Very, very important decision they're going to be making first part of this year about whether voting machines in their current form mix with the German constitution. That's important the world over. Please all cross your fingers, twiddle your thumbs, that they're going to just do away with them. Then sometime in May, the Secretary of State is going to decide whether or not she's going to put money aside to build these new machines. It's also a humongously expensive project. Figures currently circulating are in the 100 million euro range to get a country of 16 million people on electronic voting again. And we've already calculated that that's the amount of money that you could get a significant portion of all Dutch school children, one laptop per child, laptops for. Which seems like a lot. We've also calculated it's like 1,000 euros per election, per polling station, to ensure that these three people get to go home an hour and a half earlier, maximally an hour and a half earlier. Which it's really silly if you think about it. It's all this feeling that computers are somehow cleaner. It still hasn't died. The idea that we must use computers because otherwise we're not modern, or the country is somehow old-fashioned if we still count pieces of paper. This idea must die, and it will probably die in Holland also. It just takes a little bit longer. Then in 2009, there's going to be the European parliamentary elections, and those for sure will be held using paper ballots. That's already been announced, because they'll never make that. But also the 2010 municipal elections will probably be on paper, and who knows how many more. I basically want to close off with a slide that was also the closing slide last year, with the first item basically having come through. The most likely outcome is still that we'll have some kind of paper-based system, be it paper trail or that they'll just give up. And the second point is also still valid. You are now in the middle of this rollout. The next talk will be all about that. But you are in the middle of this. A large-scale rollout of a non-trustworthy, insecure, and outdated voting system, which the Dutch themselves have gotten rid of. So I would urge all of you to become active. I'm going to take questions. Oh, I am early. I'm going to take questions, quite a few questions, actually. Either use the microphones or just shout and I'll repeat your question. Just use the microphone? Okay.
One question. One argument in favor of electronic voting is that it will save the municipalities' costs. You mentioned that the estimated costs for the new to be built voting system will be around 100 million euros. Mm-hmm. So has anyone ever compiled the costs that voting costs now, doing it on paper, compared to what it would cost to do it on the electronic way?
Well, the NADAP machines, for all you can say against them, aren't very expensive. When you take into account that you can shrink the number of districts that you have, they found in Holland that doing 1,000 or 1,500 votes on paper was actually quite challenging, and that you could easily do 2,000 or 2,500 votes on NADAP machines. So the speed of people voting goes up. But of course, what that has meant is that small villages that are spread out over a large area where people live far outside the village actually have fewer polling stations, so people have to travel further to get to the polling station. So that's actually making the elections less accessible. But they need fewer people, so they may actually save money. It really depends. I've seen all sorts of figures. On the SDU machines, where the SDU was organizing the entire election, because you weren't just renting the machines, you were renting an election. And that was actually much more expensive. That was like a million euros per election more for just Amsterdam. So about a million people voting one election was a million euro more.
A paper trail doesn't do you very much good if no one's actually looking at it.
Yes.
Has there been any proposals in addition to the new scheme for printing out ballots? Are they actually going to manually count a sample? How big will that be? Do they know?
There's a new election legislation in the works, and that's actually a reason to be very worried, because this new election legislation is said to give much more control over the election to government instead of to independent bodies, which is really, you want control over the direct control over the election to be moved away from present government a little bit. In terms of, we don't know what the legislation is going to be. They say that there's going to be the possibility of recounts. They say there's going to be recounts if there's problems or suspected problems. But nobody has yet defined how you define suspected problems. If that means that if you stay under the threshold, you'll just get away with it. Or if enough people scream, you'll get it recounted. Nobody knows what those thresholds will be. Because in Holland, just like in Germany, you don't know beforehand what the critical number of votes for one coalition versus the other are. So it's not like in a two-party system where you can just define if the election results are closer than so many percent, you can start recounting a larger percentage of the ballots. But instead, you have to basically consider every vote close, or equally close at least. So we don't know what comes out of that. We don't know whether these paper ballots will ever be looked at. Which is why I think a system where 10,000 or 40,000 people count election results is actually a very nicely distributed system, which is much more trustworthy than any system where you count after the fact or where you recount the vote. Because it's much harder to think of an infrastructure that would be needed to subvert that. Any other questions? Oh, please, I'm done 10 minutes early. Come on. Somebody there?
Thank you. I may not quite understand how the political system in Germany and in the Netherlands work, but how is it possible that if a country completely defies such a intransparent system, how can another government accept it without real control, without checking, without an audit or something?
Well, I think it's...
What's the difference between the Netherlands and Germany in this respect?
I think in Germany there's a number of problems. There's only a fraction of the population actually voting electronically. The fraction is going up rapidly, but it's still at 6 or 7%. So there's not as much attention as there could have been for this issue, and it's not felt to be as important. But this also means that the amount of headache that they're willing to accept before they get rid of it altogether is much lower. In Holland, they were willing to accept a major headache, which we presented to them. But they were willing to accept a major headache before throwing away the NADOPs. Whereas here, if you give them a quarter of that headache, they're going to get rid of them in a hurry. So it has its good and its bad sides. It's harder to get attention. It's harder to get their attention also. But once you have their attention, it's going to be easier to get rid of them. But it's just a matter of making sure that they understand that this really will not stand, that the election results must be verifiable. Yes, here's a question here. Oh.
I am from Brazil, and we use electronic voting there for 3 elections already. On a mixed state of electronic and paper voting. My question would be, have you seen the other systems based on electronic voting thing, or just trying to remake the well?
Well, as I understand the Brazilian systems, as they were shown to me, they are specifically heinous because you enter your ID, your identification card number, on the machine that you are subsequently voting on. So you are... So you're basically not only trusting software to produce the right election results, but you're also placing a much larger percentage of the ballot secrecy in the hands of software that you can't verify. Now, I've been explained the system by somebody that was actually a big fan of it because he had built large parts of it. And they explained to me that, yes, everybody could come by and inspect the process of how they built the software, and the builds were actually from published code, and they were public builds where they would download components in public view and do stuff, and it was all... So they have attempted at least to have people look at the actual process from published code to getting that on the devices. But he himself also said, well, if the U.S. government wanted to screw with us and just give us processors that are manipulated or memory chips manipulated, or if then we would never know. So it only protects against sort of the low-level attack. And I don't think that process of scrutiny is as watertight as he was painting it to be. But there is at least that. But I don't like the idea of typing your... Is it really true? Did you type your personality, your ID card number into this device before voting?
No. Actually, there is a person to check if you voted or no. You present your ID to her. She opens the machine for one vote, which is anonymous.
Okay.
Then you go to the machine and vote, which is also anonymous. And besides the electronic voting, it's printed your vote, so you can make a paper check.
Uh-huh. Was? Oh, I just heard the ID card was Venezuela. No, but anyway, it's not really that central. Yes, over there. You can just shout and I'll... There's the mic already.
Whatever. So there's a lot of attention in the academic community towards some of the crypto-based sort of e-voting systems like Scratch and Vote or Predevoter. Have you guys looked at any of those and have any opinions about them?
Yes, I've looked at all of them. Scantegrity, 3Ballot, all these systems. They're all cryptographic systems which allow for something that is end-to-end verifiability, where the voter can verify that their particular vote was counted as cast. I've looked at all of them, and I figure that if you cannot explain the voting system to 99.999% of the population, then that voting system doesn't meet the requirements for a voting system. Some of these schemes are really nice and intricate. I'm not sure our current way of verifying an election, which is to send observers and to watch the process of all the votes being counted, if that can be replaced, because you'd have to really replace it, by individual voters verifying that their vote was cast was counted correctly. I'm not sure it translates one-on-one. I'm not sure you could do this in a country where a large percentage of the population is illiterate or has never touched a computer. I'm not sure you can do this in a country where the experts that would be monitoring such a system or that would be watching the source code would even live in that country. Or so I see huge problems in translating those results to the population. Generally, I don't doubt that some of these systems are very interesting. In fact, some of them are very interesting, but I just see problems in implementing. And also, I have yet to become convinced that there is actually a huge problem that needs solving. If we're going to be using computers in our society, and if we want to be more modern as a society, there are so many places where I see a screaming need for networks, computers, IT. And in this particular field, this one particular field, I do not see that need. I do not see how we can get a system that works as well and is as distributed. We don't really understand bottom-up trust, the trust that comes from having 40,000 people do something. I don't think we have an analog process that has that kind of trust sort of trickling up instead of trickling down, where you basically have one system and the government says, well, trust us, it's really good, or trust these 10 experts, it's really good. I just don't think that's equivalent. So that's sort of my take on the new electronic systems, as interesting as they may be as a research subject.
Yeah. Yes, I'd like to get back to the voting machines in Germany, and especially the German government.
The next talk is on voting machines in Germany.
Yes, I cannot see whether they were blind to what happened in the Netherlands. So is there any sort of statement known from the German governments concerning what has happened in the Netherlands so far?
I think that's all in the next talk. But what I suggest is we're now, 8 minutes early? What I suggest is for the next talk to start, and we sort of put these 8 minutes towards the debate after that, because then everybody's even more informed. No? Oh, starting early is really bad. Okay. Then we'll just go on with the questions here. Does anybody else have a question? Yes.
Do you think that these electronic voting systems can augment traditional voting? So can they augment it without gradually evolving to replace it, evolving to have some sort of dependence?
Can electronic voting augment regular paper voting? I don't think so. This is an argument made often by people that believe in internet voting or that believe in electronic voting in general. It's like, why don't we have all systems at the same time? So if you want your ballot secrecy, you can vote in a polling station, and if you don't, then you have the freedom to vote at home. The thing is, I do not depend so much on my own ballot secrecy. I depend on the ballot secrecy of everybody else. The quality of my government goes down if all the others don't have ballot secrecy, no matter whether I have it or not. So as long as you depend for your government on somebody else's vote, this whole line of argumentation of let's just have multiple system and then everybody can choose just doesn't cut it for me.
One observation from the video of the new proposed system is that the paper went in, it was scanned, it counted, and then it came out the other side. I was an election monitor during the May 2007 elections in UK, where they used an electronic counting system. How it actually worked was the papers went in, they got shredded, they got turned around, they scanned the back of them. The OCR didn't work, so it went to a manual person. About 25% were manually counted, and votes were counted multiple times in this system, which was doing the adjudication.
Yeah, so how they think they're going to be feeding a stack of paper that has been handled by voters and crumpled, folded, bent, how they're going to be feeding that into a scanner and think they're going to get anywhere near a good score on that, I don't know. Really, they're solving, as far as I'm concerned, a problem that doesn't exist, and they're creating much bigger problems. than the ones they're supposed to be solving.
One of the issues which we don't have in the Dutch system is that we don't have to put a lot of votes at the same time. In the Hamburg elections, people will have to vote really a number of times at the same time, and then the time to count those votes is much more important in the costs of the elections than is in the whole Dutch system.
Well, the Dutch system has a huge ballot, but we only vote for one candidate per election. So it's many candidates, one vote. And in Hamburg, they have not so many candidates, but they have a lot of votes. Basically, the people of Hamburg have complicated their voting system to the point that they can now rightfully claim that it's hard for humans to count the votes. I'm not sure that is a good argument to use electronics in voting, because then at the end you'll end up with humongously complicated systems. I tend to be for very simple voting systems. If people want to use more complicated voting systems, fine. However, I'm not willing to trade transparency for that, and I advise anybody from trading transparency for a more complicated voting system. It's really not worth having 20 votes if that means you will never again know whether the results are correct, and you'll never again be able to know whether the results are correct. One in the back. I have no audio.
If there's no real problem to be solved, and I think we can pretty much agree on that, and if also the reason we got democracies in the first place is that we all thought that having 40,000 people agree on something is better than just 10 experts and the rest have to trust them. If those two basic things are true, then why do we keep allowing ourselves to be drawn into the discussions on all kinds of technical details, which are, as far as I can see it, not relevant to the sort of the core point, which is there's no problem to be solved, so why are we doing this? B, you know, we have a democracy.
I asked myself this very question in Holland. Do I want to be arguing with them on a technical level? I think the approach was partly lazy, which is strange to say because we spent 1.5 years working really, really hard with 10 people. But the approach was basically lazy. Is we know that we could win on these technical arguments, even though we ourselves felt that they really didn't matter. But the technical arguments coming from us were really hard to counteract, if not impossible to counteract, because they basically could not find anybody that was willing to say that our analysis was wrong. They couldn't find technical people in all of the Netherlands that were willing to say, well, yeah, it's really good enough to be doing it without a paper.
You keep getting drawn into the discussion. Then we'll say, we'll have paper printers, or we'll do this little device, or we'll do that different.
We made those principal points all during the discussion, and we keep making them. Yeah. We're still not gone.
Well, I mean, but also here, many of the questions keep going back to technical details and seem to be oblivious about the fact that you just explained, I think, rather well, that it's these two sort of higher order points that are beyond the level of technology that are really should be reason enough to just say, stop this insanity, stop it.
Yeah,
so why is it that we all of us here can't sort of say,
I think we are. I think we are all of us are saying, let's get rid of this technology altogether. I was actually accused by SDU that I was pro NADAP because I was trying to get rid of them first. At which point I said, well, look, we're not out to kill your company or anything. We're out to kill your entire industry. and I think this is still true. This still holds true. I think, however, that they are using technical arguments to keep these systems around. Yes, but it's very transparent or it's very secure. And without the technical counter-arguments to basically say, well, but that's all not true. Without these technical counter-arguments, it just becomes a bunch of Luddites saying, well, we shouldn't be using this technology because it's fundamentally wrong. Even though in this particular case I agree, I think using the technical arguments has gotten us where we are, which is not to say that we should be making these fundamental arguments every time, and we are. Any further questions? One last one. No? Well, then I give up the stage to Frank and Constanze.